Chapter 8. Some Intelligent Conversation. Mulch had left the stolen LEP shuttle at the theme park gate. It had been a simple matter for Butler to disable the park's cameras and remove a half-rotted section from the Hemisphere's roof in order to effect the rescue. When they got back to the shuttle, Holly powered up the engines and ran a systems check. "What on earth were you doing, Mulch?" she asked, amazed by the readings the computer was displaying. "The computer says you came all the way down here in first gear."
"There are gears," said the dwarf. "I thought this crate was automatic."
"Some jockeys prefer gears. Old-fashioned, I know, but more control around the bends. And another thing, you didn't have to do that gas thing on the rope. There are plenty of stun grenades in the weapons locker."
"This thing has a locker, too? Gears and lockers? Well, I never."
Butler was giving Artemis a field physical. "You seem all right," he said, placing a massive palm over Artemis's chest. "Holly fixed up your ribs, I see." Artemis was in a bit of a daze. Now that he was out of immediate danger, the day's events were catching up on him. How many times could one person cheat death in 24 hours? Surely his odds were getting short.
"Tell me, Butler," he whispered, so the others wouldn't hear. "Is it all true? Or is it an hallucination?"
Even as the words left his lips, Artemis realized that it was an impossible question. If this was all an hallucination, then his bodyguard was a dream too.
"I turned down gold, Butler," continued Artemis,
still unable to accept his own grand gesture.
"Me? I turned down gold."
Butler smiled, much more the smile of a friend than a bodyguard. "That doesn't surprise me one bit. You were becoming quite charitable before the mind wipe." Artemis frowned. "Of course, you would say that if you were part of the hallucination." Mulch was eavesdropping on the conversation and couldn't resist a comment.
"Didn't you smell what I shot those trolls with? You think you could hallucinate that, mud boy?"
Holly started the engines.
"Hold on back there," she called over her shoulder. "It's time to go. The sensors have picked up some shuttles sweeping local chutes. The authorities are looking for us. I need to get us somewhere off the charts."
Holly teased the throttle, lifting them smoothly from the ground. If the shuttle had not had portholes, the passengers might not have noticed the takeoff. Butler elbowed Mulch.
"Did you see that? That's a takeoff. I hope you learned something."
The dwarf was highly offended.
"What do I have to do to get a bit of respect around here? You're all alive because of me, and all I get is abuse."
Butler laughed.
"Okay, little friend, I apologize. We owe you our lives, and I, for one, will never forget it."
Artemis followed this interaction curiously.
"I would deduce that you remember everything, Butler. If, for a moment, I accept this situation as reality, then your memory must have been stimulated. Did I perhaps leave something behind?"
Butler pulled the laser disc from his pocket.
"Oh yes, Artemis. There was a message on this disc for me. You left yourself a message, too."
Artemis took the disc.
"At last," he said. "Some intelligent conversation."
Artemis found a small bathroom at the rear of the shuttle. The indoor toilet was only to be used in an emergency, and the seat was made from a spongy material that Mulch had assured him would break down any waste as it passed through. Artemis decided he would test the filter at another time, and he sat on a small ledge by the porthole. There was a plasma screen on the wall, presumably for in-restroom entertainment. All he had to do was to slip the computer disk into the drive below the screen, and his fairy memories would be returned to him. A whole new world. An old one. Artemis spun the disk between his thumb and forefinger. Psychologically speaking, if he loaded this disk, it meant that some part of him accepted the truth of all this. Putting the disk in the slot could plunge him deeper into some kind of psychotic episode. Not putting it in could condemn the world to a war between species. The fairy and human worlds would collide.
"What would Father do?" Artemis asked himself.
He loaded the disk. Two files appeared on the desktop, marked with animated 3D GIFs, something the fairy system had obviously added on. Both were tagged with the file names in English and the fairy language. Artemis selected his own file by touching the plasma screen's transparent covering. The file glowed orange, then expanded to fill the screen. Artemis saw himself in Foul Manor, sitting at his desk in the study.
"Greetings," said the screen, Artemis. "How nice for you to see me. Doubtless, this will be the first intelligent conversation you've had for some time."
The real Artemis smiled.
"Correct.
he replied. I paused for a second there, continued the screen Artemis, to give you a chance to respond, thus qualifying this as a conversation. There'll be no more pausing, as time is limited. Captain Hollyshort is downstairs, being distracted by Juliet, but doubtless she will check on me soon. We depart for Chicago presently to deal with Mr. John Spyro, who has stolen something from me. The price of fairy assistance in this matter is a mind wipe. All memories of the people will be erased forever, unless I can leave a message for my future self, thus prompting recall. This is that message. The following video footage contains specific details of my involvement with the fairy people. Hopefully this information will get those brain cell pathways sparking again. Artemis rubbed his forehead. The vague, mysterious flashes persisted. It seemed as though his brain was ready to rebuild those pathways. All he needed was the right stimulus. In conclusion, said the screen Artemis, I would like to wish you, myself, the best of luck, and welcome back. The next hour passed in a blur. Images flashed from the screen, adhering to empty spaces in Artemis's brain. Each memory felt right, the instant Artemis processed it. Of course, he thought, this explains everything. I had the mirrored contact lenses made so I could lie to the fairies and hide the existence of this journal. I fixed Mulch Diggum's search warrant so that he could return the disc to me. Butler looks older because he is older. The fairy healing in London saved his life but cost him 15 years. The memories were not all proud ones. I kidnapped Captain Short. I imprisoned Holly. How could I have done that? He could not deny it any longer. This was all true. Everything that his eyes had seen was real. The fairies existed, and his life had been intertwined with theirs for more than 2 years. A million images sprouted in his consciousness, rebuilding electric bridges in his brain. They strobed behind his eyes in a confusing display of colour and wonder. A lesser mind than Artemis's might have been utterly exhausted, but the Irish boy was exhilarated. I know it all now, he thought. I beat Cowboy before, and I will do it again. This determination was fueled by sadness. Commander Root is gone. She took him from his people. Artemis had known this earlier, but now it meant something. There was another thought, more persistent than the rest. It crashed into his mind like a tsunami. I have friends, thought Artemis Fowl the second. I have friends. Artemis emerged from the bathroom a different person. Physically, he was still battered, bruised, and exhausted, but emotionally, he felt prepared for everything that lay ahead. If a body language analyst had studied him at that moment, they would have observed his relaxed shoulders and open palms, and would have concluded that this was, psychologically speaking, a more welcoming and trustworthy individual than the one who had entered the bathroom an hour earlier. The shuttle was parked in a secondary chute, off the beaten track, and its occupants were at the mess table. A selection of LEP field ration packs had been torn open and devoured. The biggest pile of foil packs was stacked in front of Mulch Diggum's. Mulch glanced at Artemis and noticed the change immediately.
About time you got your head in order, grunted Mulch, struggling from his chair. I need to get into that bathroom urgently.
Nice to see you too, Mulch, said Artemis, stepping aside to allow the dwarf past. Holly froze, a sachet of juice halfway to her mouth. You remember him? Artemis smiled. Of course, Holly. We've known each other for over 2 years. Holly jumped from her chair and clasped Artemis by the shoulders. Artemis, it's great to see you. The real you. The gods know we need Artemis Fowl right now. Well, he's here and ready for duty, Captain. Do you remember everything? Yes, I do. And first of all, let me apologize for that consultant business. That was very rude, please forgive me. But what made you remember? Wondered the elf. Don't tell me a visit to the bathroom jogged your memory. Not exactly. Artemis held up the computer disk. I gave this to Mulch. It's my video diary. He was supposed to return it to me on his release from prison. Holly shook her head. That's not possible. Mulch was searched by experts. The only thing you gave to him was the gold medallion. Artemis angled the disk so that it caught the light.
Of course, groaned Holly, slapping her forehead. You passed off that disc as the gold medallion. Very clever. Artemis shrugged. Genius, actually.
It seems merely clever in hindsight, but the original idea was pure genius. Holly cocked her head.
Genius, of course. Believe it or not, I actually missed that smug grin.
Artemis took a breath.
So sorry about Julius. I know our relationship was a rocky one, but I had nothing but respect and admiration for the commander.
Holly wiped her eyes with the heels of her hands. She said nothing, just nodding. If Artemis needed another reason to go after Opal Cowboy, the sight of the elfin captain, so disturbed, was it.
Butler ate the contents of a field ration pack in one mouthful. Now that we're all reacquainted, we should try to track Opal Cowboy down. It's a big world.
Artemis waved his fingers dismissively.
No need. I know exactly where our would-be murderer is. Like all megalomaniacs, she has a tendency to show off.
He crossed to a plastic computer keyboard on the wall, calling up a map of Europe.
I see your gnomish has come back to you, sniffed Holly.
Of course, said Artemis, enlarging part of the map. Opal revealed a little bit more of her plans than she knew. She let two words slip, though one would have been sufficient. She said her human name was to be Belinda Zito. Now, if you wish to lead the humans to the fairy people, who better to have adopt you than the renowned billionaire environmentalist Giovanni Zito?
Holly crossed the shuttle deck to the screen.
And where will we find Mr. Zito?
Artemis tapped a few keys, zooming in on Sicily.
At his world-famous Earth Ranch, right here in Messina Province, he said.
Mulch stuck his head out of the bathroom. The rest of him was mercifully hidden behind the door.
Did I hear you talking about a mud man named Zito?
Holly turned towards the dwarf, then kept right on turning.
Yes, so what? And for heaven's sake, close the door!
Mulch pulled the door so only a crack remained.
I was just watching a bit of human television in here, as you do. Well, there's a Zito on CNN. Do you think it's the same person?
Holly grabbed a remote control from the table.
I really hope not, she said. But I'd bet my life it is.
A group of humans appeared on the screen. They were gathered in what looked like a prefabricated laboratory, and each wore a white coat. One stood out from the rest. He was in his mid-40s, with tanned skin, strong, handsome features, and long, dark hair curling over his collar. He wore rimless glasses and a lab coat. A striped Versace shirt protruded from under his white lapels.
Giovanni Zito, said Artemis.
It is incredible, really,
Zito was telling a reporter in slightly accented English.
We have sent crafts to other planets, and yet we have no idea what lies beneath our feet. Scientists can tell us the chemical makeup of Saturn's rings, but we don't honestly know what lies at the center of our own planet. But probes have been sent down before, said the reporter, trying to pretend he hadn't just picked up this knowledge from his earpiece.
Yes, agreed Zito, but only to a depth of about 10 kilometers, less than halfway through the crust at its thinnest point. We need to get through to the outer core itself, over 3,000 kilometers down. Imagine if the currents of liquid metal in the outer core could be harnessed. There's enough free energy in that metal to power mankind's machines forever.
The reporter was skeptical. At least, the real scientist speaking in his earpiece told him to be skeptical.
But this is all speculation, Dr. Zito. Surely a voyage to the center of the Earth is nothing but a fantasy, possible only in the pages of science fiction.
A brief flash of annoyance clouded Giovanni Zito's features. This is no fantasy, sir, I assure you. This is no fantastical voyage. We are sending an unmanned probe bristling with sensors. Whatever is down there, we will find it.
The reporter's eyes widened in panic as a particularly technical question came through his earpiece. He listened for several seconds, mouthing the words as he heard them.
Dr. Zito, this probe you are sending down, I believe it will be encased in 100 million tons of molten iron at about 5,500 degrees Celsius. Is that correct?
Absolutely, confirmed Zito.
The reporter looked relieved.
Yeah, I knew that. Well, anyway, my point is, it will take several years to gather so much iron. So why did you ask us here today?
Zito clapped his hands excitedly.
This is the wonderful part. As you know, the core probe was a long-term project. I had planned to accumulate the iron over the next 10 years, but now laser drilling has revealed a deep ore body of hematite, iron ore, on the bottom edge of the crust, right here in Sicily. It's incredibly rich, perhaps 85% iron. All we need to do is detonate several charges inside that deposit, and we will have our molten iron. I have already secured the mining permits from the government.
The reporter asked the next question all on his own. So, Dr. Zito, when do you detonate?
Giovanni Zito removed two thick cigars from his lab coat pocket. We detonate today, he said, passing a cigar to the reporter. 10 years early. This is a historic moment.
Zito drew the office curtains, revealing a fenced-off area of scrubland outside the window. A metallic section of piping protruded from the earth in the center of the half-mile square enclosure. As they watched, a crew of workmen clambered out of the piping, moving hurriedly away from the opening.
Wisps of gaseous coolant spiraled from the pipe. The men climbed into a golf trolley and exited the compound. They took shelter in a concrete bunker at the perimeter.
There are several megatons of TNT buried at strategic points inside the ore body, explained Zito. If this was detonated on the surface, it would cause an earthquake, measuring 7 on the Richter scale.
The reporter swallowed nervously.
Really?
Zito laughed.
Don't worry, the charges are shaped. The blast is focused down and in. The iron will be liquefied and begin its descent to the Earth's core, carrying the probe with it. We will feel nothing.
Down and in. You're sure about that?
Positive, said Zito. We are perfectly safe here.
On the wall behind the Italian doctor, a speaker squawked 3 times.
Dottore Zito, said a gruff voice. All clear, all clear.
Zito picked up a black remote detonator from the desk.
The time has come, he said dreamily.
He looked straight into the camera.
My darling Belinda, this is for you.
Zito pressed the button and waited, wide-eyed. The room's other occupants, the dozen or so scientists and technicians, turned anxiously to various readout panels and monitors.
We have detonation, announced one.
9 miles below ground, 42 shaped charges exploded simultaneously, liquefying 118 million tons of iron. The rock content was pulverized and absorbed by the metal. A pillar of smoke blew out of the cylindrical opening, but there was no detectable vibration.
The probe is functioning at 100%,
said a technician. Zito breathed out.
That was our big worry. Even though the probe is designed for exactly these conditions, the world has never seen this kind of explosion before.
He turned to another lab worker.
Any movement?
The man hesitated before answering.
Yes, Dr. Zito, we have vertical movement, 5 meters per second, exactly as you hypothesized.
Below the Earth's crust, a behemoth of iron and rock began its painstaking descent towards the Earth's core. It chugged and churned, bubbling and hissing, prizing apart the mantle below it. Inside the molten mass, a grapefruit-sized probe continued to broadcast data. Spontaneous euphoria erupted in the laboratory. Men and women hugged each other. Cigars were lit and champagne corks popped. Someone even pulled out a violin.
We are on our way, shouted a jubilant Zito, lighting the reporter's cigar. Man is going to the center of the Earth. Look out below.
In the stolen LEP shuttle, Holly froze the picture. Zito's triumphant features were spread across the screen.
Look out below, she repeated glumly. Man is coming to the center of the Earth.
The moods in the shuttle ranged from glum to desolate. Holly was taking it especially hard. The entire fairy civilization was under threat yet again, and this time Commander Root wasn't around to meet the challenge. Not only that, but since the LEP pursuit pods had blown out their communications, there was no way to warn Foley about the probe. I have no doubt he already knows, said Artemis. Pat Centaur monitors all the human news channels. But he doesn't know that Opal Cowboy is giving Zito the benefit of her fairy knowledge. Holly pointed at Giovanna's image on the screen. Look at his eyes. The poor man has been mesmerized so many times his pupils are actually ragged. Artemis stroked his chin thoughtfully.
If I know Foley, he's been monitoring this project since its initiation. He probably already has a contingency plan.
I'm sure he has. A contingency plan for a crackpot scheme in 10 years' time that will probably never work. Of course, agreed Artemis, as opposed to a scientifically viable scheme right now that has every chance of succeeding. Holly headed for the cockpit. I have to turn myself in, even if I'm a murder suspect. There's more at stake here than my future.
Steady on, objected Mulch. I broke out of prison for you. I have no desire to be shoved back in again.
Artemis stepped in front of her. Wait a minute, Holly. Think about what will happen if you do turn yourself in.
Artemis is right, added Butler. You should think about this. If the LEP is anything like human police forces, fugitives are not exactly welcomed with open arms. Open cell doors, maybe.
Holly forced herself to stop and think. But it was difficult. Every second she waited was another second for the giant iron slug to eat its way through the mantle. If I give myself up to internal affairs, I will be taken into custody. As a LEP officer, I can be held for 72 hours without counsel. As a murder suspect, I can be held for up to a week. Even if someone did believe that I was completely innocent and that Opal Cowboy was behind all this, it would still take at least 8 hours to get clearance for an operation. But in all likelihood, my claims would be dismissed as the standard protests of the guilty, especially with you three backing up my story. No offence.
None taken, said Mulch.
Holly sat down, cradling her head in her hands. My world is utterly gone. I keep thinking there will be a way back, but things just spin further and further out of control.
Artemis placed a hand on her shoulder.
Courage, Captain. Ask yourself, what would the commander do?
Holly took 3 deep breaths, then sprang from her seat, her back stiff with determination.
Don't you try to manipulate me, Artemis Fowl. I make my own decisions. Even so, Julius would take care of Opal Cowboy himself. So that's what we're going to do.
Excellent, said Artemis. In that case, we'll need a strategy.
Right. I'll fly the shuttle. You put that brain of yours to work and come up with a plan.
Each to his own, said the boy. He sat in one of the shuttle's chairs, gently massaged his temples with his fingertips, and began to think.